I can't help but do this. I grew up on a farm, and this time of year, I'm as comfortable on a wagon as I am anywhere else, although it's been a while. Something about it. Yeah, it's hard work, but it's also, well, it brings back a lot just to be here. We had a small orchard. We grew some apples. We pressed them for cider. We had pigs and chickens. We had a goat and all that kind of stuff. I could romanticize all that, but I'm not going to do that much. Maybe a little bit. I was going to sleep in a tent last night, as some of you did. I couldn't find our tent. And then I realized that we had lent it to our daughter and son-in-law to go camping one weekend, which probably was a good thing. The tent was 35 years old, and they, when they called us from the campsite, said, this tent really stinks. We said, okay, you know what? Just leave it there. Just toss it. So it's gone. But it would have been fun. There's something about tenting that just it brings something that, well, we've been singing about it, about being in nature. We've tented a number of times in our lives. When we were in Richmond, Virginia, at times we would go off and tent with friends for a weekend or whatever, especially if it had been a dry summer. We would go off tenting and it would rain. So it was the Lord responded, I guess. Seemed like it happened all the time. But the last time we were tenting was a year ago in Peru. We took our daughters and sons-in-law to hike the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. Now you can take a bus there or a train, which I think is fun, probably, but there's something about taking the Inca Trail to the place that was honored by those ancient people that gets us in touch with what they might have experienced. They probably didn't have nice tents and mats like we did, and definitely didn't have porters to help us along, but we traveled the same journey they did on that same ancient trail. And that's what we do. Often when we gather together on a Sunday, or really any other time, if we remember what our spiritual ancestors have been through before. I'll read just a short scripture this morning from Leviticus. Not one of the top 10 choices probably for most of us. But the people of Israel had three festivals. Well, they had a number of festivals. There were three main ones. And as it happens, all three seem to happen so close together in time. There is Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year, the head of the year, New Year's Day. There is Yom Kippur, 10 days later, the Day of Atonement, when they recognized that God had been with them. And there is Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, which this year is October 2nd to 9. And so here's the background of the Feast of Tabernacles from Leviticus. So beginning with the 15th day of the seventh month, after you have gathered the crops of the land, celebrate the festival to the Lord for 7 days. The first day is a day of Sabbath rest, and the eighth day also is a day of Sabbath rest. On the first day, you're to take branches from luxuriant trees, from palms, willows, and other leafy trees, and rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. Celebrate this as a festival to the Lord for 7 days each year. This is a lasting ordinance for generations to come. Celebrate it in the seventh month. Live in temporary shelters for 7 days. All native-born Israelites are to live in such shelters. So your descendants will know that I had the Israelites live in temporary shelters when I brought them out of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Camping is, well, some of us like it. Some of us think it's kind of peculiar. Heard a guy just yesterday say, why would you work so hard to build a house and have a nice house and so that you can take a vacation and pretend that you're homeless? Didn't get it. But it gets us in touch with nature, of which we're part. It gets us in touch, if we make that connection, to the tabernacling that happened with the people of Israel. Now, you can romanticize the past. You can overemphasize the positive parts of it and overlook the other things. And we are tempted to do that at times. I have a friend who is really into Revolutionary War reenactment. He's a member of a regiment in Connecticut. And from time to time, they will get together. He's got a musket sitting by his fireplace in his pre-Revolutionary War house. And he will go and camp with his regiment, and they'll sit around the fire and they'll shoot guns and that kind of stuff. He's not into the Civil War reenactment, because I guess that's too recent, maybe. I don't know. But he's just not into that. But I kind of think that maybe there might be something else. It's easier to romanticize the Revolutionary War, because it was way back. It was a part of the mythology of us finding our freedom and all that kind of stuff. Whereas the Civil War, now, yeah, it's been a long time ago. None of us remembers it, but that weighs heavy on us. It was about slavery. It was about brother and sister against brother and sister. A high percentage of the people in our country died during that time. That weighs heavy on us. I don't know that that's why he's not into it, but that is hard to romanticize. A few years ago, when we still lived in Richmond, I was out one warm summer evening. I wanted to take a run, so I ran to Bird Park, where there was a trail, about a mile trail through the park. I was running around there a couple of loops, and Dogwood Dell was right next to Bird Park. And they had concerts there, which was kind of nice. Sometimes you could hear the music. But I remember this evening, I was just running around, and there was something else going on. There was some sort of concert, I think, that involved a reenactment of a Civil War battle. And so, as a part of this show, there were guys running through the trees shooting at each other. This is hard enough to see in the middle of the city. But for some reason, it really got to me as I was running around this trail that somehow what is involved in this reenactment of people shooting at each other? And I ended up just running and weeping, because you can't romanticize that. They reenact the tabernacle to remember the wilderness. Even to this day, some Jewish families will maybe not put a tent up, but if they have a balcony, they'll put palm branches out and they'll sleep outside to remember that their ancestors had this experience. It's probably kind of fun. You know, if they have kids doing it, they make it a lot of fun. Maybe they sleep by the fire, that sort of thing. It's great. But the reason they remember it is that they were on a journey and they didn't know where they were going. God was with them as they didn't know where they were going. I can identify with that. Sometimes, maybe some of you can too. I don't know, in some respect, where we are going. And that might be true personally. There might be, some kind of health thing going on. There might be whatever else there is that you're facing. There might be a job situation. You've been there. You will be there. Maybe you are there. You don't quite know what will happen. And so there's that wilderness. yet God is with us. They reenacted that to remember that God was with them. God was with them as a people and would continue to be with them to show them the way, to show them at night there'd be a pillar of fire, in the daytime a pillar of cloud, something appropriate to lead them forward, to keep them hoping, keep them moving. And so you can imagine when your family is out sleeping under these palm fronds, they might remember, okay, there is something leading us forward. And it might be the gathering of God's people that we remind them, maybe the singing of hymns that have meant a lot in their childhood that would remind them God continued to be with them. I don't know that that's why we sleep in a tent, but that's something that happens. The writer of the Gospel of John picked that up, picked that notion up of God being with us in the wilderness. Now, he starts off with these images that come from Greek philosophy, the image of the pre-existent nature of God, whatever that is somehow, the Word, as it was called in Greek philosophy. And the Gospel of John begins, the Word is among us. And he says in John 1:14, the Word, the essence of God, came to live among us. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And what follows then is a story of Jesus. Here's the phrase in there. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. That's a Greek word that means the Word became flesh and pitched his tent among us, encamped among us, tabernacled among us, lived in a tent among us. God came and lived among us. Not just a pillar of cloud showing us where to go, but living with us, giving us hope that way, being among us. There are different ways of remembering that when we gather together. We don't do this that much, and maybe you have, but there are more liturgical churches that I have been among from time to time where there's a formal liturgy. And one of the phrases that I remember, and you might have run into this, the phrase begins at the beginning as the call to worship. The worship leader will say, "The Lord be with you." And you respond, "And also with you." So you are acquainted with that. The Lord be with you and also with you. I was pondering that one this morning. That's a statement of faith. And if we went no further than that in worship, we would have the essence of God living among us, God tabernacling among us. The Lord be with you and also with you. It's not something that we are wishing would happen. We are declaring does happen, that God lives among us. And we get together for various reasons, either in a church building or outside or here, to be together, because we like each other, most of us anyway, probably, and we have a lot of fun. But that is the primary reason to remember the Lord is with you and also with me. If there were nothing more than that, it would be enough. Some of us really like to be outdoors, and others of you will tolerate it, but some of us really like to be outdoors for the reason that we sense God's presence even more here than maybe anywhere else. Something about just being in nature. Fairest Lord Jesus, fair are the meadows, the woodlands, the blooming garb of spring, all that reminds us of God's presence among us. And sometimes, to be honest, I feel that just as much when I am out by myself or hiking with family or friends. The presence of God in creation is so reassuring, rejuvenating, doesn't answer all my questions, but gives enough strength to get through the day. There's something I wish that I had done years ago. I wish I had, for one, learned how to use a phone. I wish I had learned to play guitar. At the same time as I wish I had done, I know it's not too late, I could, but I would never be as good as I want to be, so I'm going to leave that behind. Partly because I'm drawn to good guitarists, and especially those who have good lyrics to go with it, that are sometimes just give that, it's often poetry, and I don't always even know what it means necessarily, but it, just like being in nature, reminds me of something else, of God's presence, of God's caring, God's goodness, God's love. And so I can't play guitar. I was going to do this last night, and I resisted the temptation. I'm going to do it now. This is a guy named Bruce Cockburn, who is a Canadian songwriter, very popular in Canada. They call him the Canadian Bruce Springsteen. He's not as popular in the U.S. You might remember a couple of years ago, some years ago now, there was a song, "Sun's Up, Mm-hmm, Looks Okay, World Survives Until Another Day, and I'm Wondering Where the Lines Are." You remember that? No. Okay. Top 40, the only top 40 that he ever had here in the U.S. He's one of those, one-hit wonders, they call him. But I started listening to him probably in the late 70s, He takes me outside. He takes me to a place of wonder, where I don't always even know what it is God is saying, but I'm aware of God's presence, God's goodness, God's love for me, God's ultimate care for me and us and all creation, and that eventually all will be well. And so, we'll give this a try. I'm going to try this from YouTube. There we go. No, that's not it. That's not it. He's a good guitar player, but that's not it. No thanks. No. Stop. You know, the next thing. There's a clip from SNL that's going to come up here that I don't want to have that one. Although Saturday Night Live was also pretty entertaining. Here we go. No, that's not it either. You know, I might just have to. Sorry, Bruce. I'm going to leave it. Leave it here and do it without his guitar. All the diamonds in this world that mean anything to me are conjured up by wind and sunlight sparkling on the sea. Ran aground in a harbor town, lost a taste for being free. Thank God he sent some gold-chased ship to carry me to sea. 2,000 years and half a world away, dying trees still will grow greener when you pray. Silver scales flash bright, then fade in the reeds along the shore. Like a pearl in a sea of liquid jade, his ship comes shining. Like a crystal swan in a sky of suns, his ship comes shining. Yeah, so it's a poem. I don't know all of what it means, but he wrote that song when he realized that he was a Christian. In the early 70s, he said, you know, he had encountered all these philosophies, and it wasn't even a rational thing necessarily, but he was sitting down one day and realized that what he was doing in his life was following Jesus, that Jesus had somehow come to be with him, and they encountered each other, and he responded. Sometimes it's a little more rational than that, but most of the time, for me anyway, it's not. I just kind of know it. I just kind of know that he is here with us, and it's probably in the outdoors that it happens. And it might be when I'm among you all. The Lord be with you.